Hello, Akita. This is Dateline Pacific from RNZ Pacific. I'm Don Wiseman. And in today's program, an NGO says the stigma of mental illness in Samoa is contributing to the country's stubbornly high suicide rate. The head of the United Nations Population Funds in New Zealand this week, holding high-level meetings on gender equality in the Pacific. An expert in Pacific fisheries, food security and climate change is touting a proactive way for countries like Vanuatu to rapidly restore their ability to feed themselves after disaster. And there are fears a rare alpine tree in Samoa may have gone extinct. An NGO says the stigma of mental illness in Samoa is contributing to the country's stubbornly high suicide rate. Fatawa Laola, which means value life, says about 20 Samoans are taking their lives each year. The NGO's executive director, Papali'i Tiumalu Caroline Paul Achong, says young Samoans are the most vulnerable to suicide. Ben Robinson-Drawbridge spoke to Papali'i after last week's World Suicide Prevention Day.
In the late 1970s, suicide rates soared here in Samoa, so that by 1981, Samoa was rated third in the world and first in the Pacific per capita. So while the annual suicide figures decreased in the 1980s, there was an increase again in the mid-90s, and this continued to fluctuate between 20 and 30 deaths per year. It came down to 20 last year, 2018, and this year, currently, we have 11.
Of current statistics, then, which groups in Samoan society are most vulnerable to suicide?
The age group that is most at risk is the youth, between 12 to 35. And then we have the older married couples, so say between 35 to 55. And we've noted that the most common causes over the past 10 years has been issues between married couples, relationships between young teens, parents versus their children. And the biggest factor we perceive is that it's a lack of communication. Samoans tend to bottle things up and they don't come forward and seek help. People are afraid to share. It's very hard for them to reach out to, say, their pastor or their teacher, or their siblings, or their parents. It's just the way of life here.
And are men more vulnerable than women?
Yes. Men are more vulnerable. I think it stems from this macho attitude that our Samoan men have, that they're invincible and, you know, they can overcome anything. They find it hard to reach out and ask for help or seek help. But slowly but surely, we're hoping that we're turning that around. But mental health here and depression is not recognized as an illness. It's recognized as a weakness. Say, postnatal blues, and a lot of women suffer from that here, and it's not acknowledged. Men might be suffering from financial issues, marital issues, relationship issues, and they go into depression. But rather than seeing this as something that is treatable, it's kind of swept under the carpet or ignored. And so when you get to a point where you really are suffering mentally, the services are very limited. And like I said, the issue of mental health is stigmatized. People perceive you as being, you're going loony, you know, you're crazy. You should be put away, that sort of thing. So people are very reluctant to seek help when they suffer. And more often than not, it comes to a point where it's too late and they attempt suicide. And more often than not, it's completed. And when we do our awareness programs, we try and put the message out there, you don't need to come to a point where you believe that life is useless and that you're useless and there's nothing more for you. There's always help out there, always. And failing everyone around you, you can just pick up that free line and call us.
Papali'i Tiumalu Caroline Paul Achong and Fautawa Le'ola offer a confidential counselling service. The phone number is 800-5433. The head of the United Nations Population Fund is in New Zealand this week holding high-level meetings on gender equality. Dr. Natalia Kanim, who's a medical doctor with expertise in public health, has met with the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Family Planning and Women's Organisations to discuss better health, education and rights for women and girls in the region. She told Jenny Meyer the Pacific Reset's an important move forward, but to really make a difference in the lives of women, it's men who need to step up.
Men and boys are such a crucial part of this equation. And there is nothing that makes you more proud than to see a dad defend the right of his daughter to have her full education and take her place in society. Gender equality is as good for men as it is for women. A lot of the discussions now about young dads being able to stay home and spend a couple of weeks and months with their young newborn, it makes all the difference for that young person growing up. And I think it also humanizes the workplace and makes us have much more cordial and equal relationships. What we do need for men to understand is that you give up nothing by defending the rights of women and girls. It is not manly, in fact, to assault and attack women. It is much more in the spirit of collaboration. And there are beautiful proverbs that go along with that. I've learned one when I've been here where you repeat, it is the people, it is the people, it is the people. I think this is so beautiful. It's at the heart of what the United Nations is doing as we think about peace and security. Men are a huge part of that equation, and it was a privilege to speak with people like Mr. Winston Peters, who made it very clear that as he looks across the Pacific, and you know he has like a new reset strategy that we found really important and UNFPA will cooperate with, to hear him advocate for the young girls of New Zealand and across the region, and to say that their education should be a priority, so they will be part of that new generation. It was truly wonderful.
And what can we do? It seems in 2019 that there's an increasing sort of surge of hate and division. What can we do to turn it around more towards love rather than hate? Because, you know, we're talking about reproductive health here. We're talking about creating families.
You are so right. And I would chime in that when we talk about the cycle of life and how precious each and every human life is, we must redouble efforts to have a spirit of dialogue and conversation. And this is what Nairobi is going to be about. Rights and choices that we will together put on the table in a spirit of respect, of love, of understanding. I have to tell you that your Prime Minister, in her compassion and in her leadership, has really received so much admiration from the young people around the world who I meet, you know, in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America. New Zealand is in the spotlight because of this insistence that we must turn to dialogue, to understanding, to knowing our neighbors in order to overcome some of the tragedies that are happening right around the world. What we're saying is that even in times of crisis, and, you know, climate change is increasing the magnitude and the frequency of natural disasters, etc., in these type of crises, women and girls often lose access to vital health services and they face a heightened risk of violence. That women and girls must be on the front lines of this dialogue about solutions. And as the United Nations, we are strengthening our support, our partnerships directly with women's groups, with the private sector, you know, with women and men entrepreneurs. What we want to do is to leverage this opportunity for dialogue that turns to action. A lot of times we've had great conferences and everybody goes their separate ways. Well, in Nairobi, what we're saying is come with a commitment. Commit to something that's going to be meaningful in terms of making sure that the ability to even disagree respectfully does not lead to violence, does not lead to people being left behind. No matter who you are, you have rights and choices. And this goes for everybody, whether it's inclusion of people of different sexual diversities, inclusion of people with disabilities, indigenous peoples. There are so many platforms where we will be discussing how are we going to fund this agenda, how will we work with communities where aging is a feature of population change. But our fundamental point is contraception, ending death in childbirth, and paying new and reinvigorated attention to ending violence against women and girls. these are worthy topics for us to discuss this year in Nairobi.
The upcoming international conference is in Nairobi in November and marks 25 years since the core meeting in Cairo, giving rise to the UN Sustainable Development Goals that underscore public policy now in 180 countries. An expert in Pacific fisheries, food security and climate change is touting a proactive way for countries like Vanuatu to rapidly restore their ability to feed themselves after disaster strikes. Conservation International's Senior Director of Pacific Tuna Fisheries, Joanne Bell, says when Cyclone Pam tore through Vanuatu in 2015, it took 18 months to restore significant fishing because its coastal fish aggregating devices, or FADs, were destroyed. Dr. Bell's idea aims to restore these large-scale tuna lures in a near immediate way. The adjunct professor at the University of Wollongong says Vanuatu doesn't have the same wealth of coral reefs as many Pacific nations, so is dependent on migratory fish species which need to be aggregated. Dr. Bell explained to Dominic Godfrey how the concept would work and why the Australian and New Zealand militaries could be the answer for implementation.
The people in Vanuatu, the fisheries staff there, have developed what they call their Vatuika fad, which means fish and wealth. And it's a very clever design because it's normally quite difficult to deploy a heavy anchor, like a three-quarter ton, one-ton cement block out of a small boat as the anchor for the fad. Now, their solution to the problem was to work with sandbags. So they would pull up to a community on an island, they would fill sandbags on the beach. They would tie the sandbags together in a sort of like an octopus type structure, which allowed them to lower the sandbags over one at a time, but the sandbags were still all connected, so they had an effective anchor which actually nestled well into the substrate and provided a very effective anchor for their fish aggregating device. And for those people who don't know what a fish aggregating device is, it's built on the observation that if you're out at sea and you see a floating log or a large palm leaf or anything, there's a fair probability that tuna and other large pelagic fish like dolphin fish and wahoo are going to be aggregated with that floating object. They don't aggregate forever. They might spend 2 or 3 days in the vicinity of that object and then they'll move along. And so if we can mimic that process by anchoring that floating object close to the coast, it really helps to stop the tuna as they go past the island. You don't have to chase after them in your boat, and they move quite quickly. So what these fish aggregating devices do is they allow people to actually paddle out in their canoes and really increase their probability of catching a tuna. They're not magic. You won't always catch a tuna around a fad, but that really does improve your chances of catching one.
And then beyond that, following Cyclone Pam, some further innovations were being developed you were involved with?
Well, that's right. I mean, we really want to avoid the situation that happened after Cyclone Pam, where it actually took 18 months to get fads back in the water following the cyclone. I mean, the country, you know, was subject to a Category 5 cyclone. There was so much damage everywhere, a lot of dislocation. So what we thought would be a good way in the future is actually to store the materials for the fish aggregating devices on the islands in a way that was also cyclone-proof. For instance, you could bolt down a 40-foot shipping container, store the materials to build fads within the container. You hear a cyclone's coming. You can also put 2 or 3 20-foot banana boats in there, protect them. Once the cyclone has passed, you can get your fad into the water in a matter of days. And the provincial fisheries officers have been trained in how to build and deploy these fads. And then the communities can probably start fishing around a fad within 2 to 3 weeks.
And I hear you've already trialled this.
Well, we have only in a limited way. We have installed 2 shipping containers on the island of Santo, and they are stocked with actually 40 spare sets of fad materials.
Of course, Vanuatu is the country most subject to natural disaster in the world. It has the highest likelihood of experiencing eruption, tsunami, cyclone, basically whatever nature can throw at it. So throughout the country, it would need devices like this. What's standing in the way of deployment?
Cost. It's not a cheap option, as you can imagine. I mean, there are only two really large ports in Vanuatu, the Port Vila and Luganville. And so getting a 40-foot container from one of those locations onto a remote island could technically be done by hiring large seagoing barges and so forth and so on. But the other idea that we had, which I think to me makes a lot of sense, is to approach Australia and New Zealand, that have both got naval vessels dedicated to humanitarian relief. And I think it would be wonderful in a future exercise in the region if Australia and New Zealand could cooperate to use these vessels to transport these shipping containers to the region and then use their equipment to bring the containers ashore and actually install them.
So a bilateral military exercise, which is training people to do real exercises which can help people, it seems to make sense to me.
Well, and me too. I mean, I don't know the technical specifications. Maybe a 40-foot container is too big for a helicopter to lift. It's a pretty big object. But landing barges, I mean, I think it in many ways would simulate some of the things that would go on in a military exercise, a real military exercise. And so why don't we practice in that way and at the same time deliver a really important benefit for these islands, because fish will have to play an increasing part in food security in the future. We have quite rapidly growing populations throughout the region, and Vanuatu is no exception. We know how important fish is for nutrition, and finding practical ways where we can increase access to fish is a very important and worthwhile thing to do.
That's Conservation International's Dr. Johan Bell. There are fears that a rare alpine tree in Samoa may have gone extinct. A recent search for the Va'ia Samoans, a tree which can grow up to 16 metres tall and only grows at the top of Apolu's Maunga Lapue, found nothing. The president of the Samoan Conservation Society, James Atherton, says the summit's been battered by cyclones and invasive weeds. The society has spent the last 2 months surveying Samoa for four critically threatened species in order to get cuttings and seeds to preserve the species. But Mr. Atherton told Jamie Tahana there was no luck when it came to finding the Va'ia Samoans.
It's only found on one mountain on Upolu Island and hasn't been seen for a number of years, and we've been looking for it. It's an endemic. Basically, it means it's restricted to Samoa. In this case, it's restricted to one mountain, which means it's pretty unusual. And we went to look for the Va'ia a few times up in the centre of Upolu in the mountains. It's only found around about 1,000 metres, sort of near the summit of Upolu, and we couldn't find it. So it may be extinct, possibly, or maybe it's there. We just need to look a bit harder. It's difficult country up there because there's been a lot of cyclone damage to the forest in the centre of Upolu, and there's a lot of invasive weeds that have taken over that particular area. So it's hard work to do our kind of surveys. So we're thinking about putting up a drone and see whether we can find it that way. The difficulty is, it's normally a medium-sized tree, but a lot of the big trees have been blown down by cyclones. So if it is up there, it probably is a smaller tree, difficult to spot, but we're going to give it a try.
Yeah, how long has it been since someone's seen one?
I think it was about 10 years ago that it was last seen. Yeah, so there was some surveys back in 2008, 2009, and it was seen then. But that area has been, there's been more cyclones in the interim, and also spreading of invasive plants makes it really hard to find, you know, plants that are very rare and scattered.
Are there any sort of cuttings or seeds stored of the Samoans, or if it does turn out to be extinct, that's it, gone kind of thing?
Well, it could be. Could well be. I mean, we're still hopeful that it's up there and we'll find it. But the project that we're doing with the Botanical Gardens Conservation International, BGCI, is actually to try and find rare and endemic plants and particular trees here in Samoa. So the good news is that we managed to find three of the four, the target plants. So there's a rare palm that's only found on Upolu in a similar area to the Va'ia, and we found that one. And we've got seeds of that one, fruits of that one, and we're growing that in the nursery at Vailima, which is the national nursery for Samoa, or botanical gardens for Samoa. And then there were another two plants on Savai, one of them in the northwest of Savai, at Falealupo, only found in that forest, Manokara, local name Pau, used for handicrafts and axe handles, very, very hard wood. So we found that one, and we actually found it fruiting, which is great. So that hasn't been done before that we're aware of, that people have collected the fruits, and now we're growing little plants from the seeds. So that was a success. And then the last one is a plant called Electrion. It's an unusual name. And that's only found in the mountains of Savai up behind Aopo village. And we found that one. We collected some cuttings of that one. So the only one there that we really had a problem with was the Vavaya. It's really a sign that, you know, we have quite a rich endemic plant flora here. Probably 30% of our plants are only found in Samoa. And with changes to the environment, climate change, and also loss of forest, you know, a lot of our rare plants are becoming rarer. So that's why this work is important.
That's James Atherton. And that is Dateline Pacific from RNZ Pacific. Thanks for joining us. I'm Don Wiseman. Until next time, tofa.